Welcome to this podcast from VCP 2014, the Vital Church Planting Conference. The conference is held in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, every year and brings together church planting leaders from across Canada. It is co-sponsored by the Anglican Diocese of Toronto and the Wycliffe College Institute of Evangelism, which is closely connected with Fresh Expressions Canada. We hope you enjoy this podcast. For more information on the conference and how you can register for the next Vital Church Planting Conference, please visit www.vitalchurchplanting.com.
So welcome, everybody. My apologies for the confusion from yesterday. If you came to my workshop yesterday, I was not there.
Yeah, it
was interesting because it said, I did look back at the website and it says this workshop will be offered Friday afternoon, and then above it said Thursday at 4 p.m. So I took the Friday afternoon thing. So here we are, Friday afternoon. I win. let's begin with a brief prayer, why don't we? So gracious God, thank you. Thank you for meeting each one of us. Thank you for being the hero in our rescue. Thank you, Lord, that you've called us up into this calling of being a part of your rescue plan for the whole world. And we humbly once again realize that we don't come with a ton of wisdom or a huge amount of skill. But Lord, we do come with obedience and with humility and an excitement and passion to be part of what you want to do in this world. And especially in the places where we live, the places where we raise our families, the places where we play and work. Thank you that, Lord, you are there. May we find you and the good things you're doing in our places of work and play, where we live. Let us be used by you, and may we always give you glory and honor. For those of us who've had a full day already, help us, Lord, to be alert to the things that you want to say to our hearts and minds in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. Well, I'll introduce myself. I think I've been here a couple years, not in a row, but I've been here a few times, and I don't know if I've talked to you folks before. Does anybody remember me? No? Good. All right. Good. So I can tell all the same stories I told before. No. I just wanted to get a sense of that. And since we're a smaller group, I would like to give a little sense of where you are, where you live, maybe even if you're in the midst of starting something new and fresh, or if you are thinking about it, or if you are, I'm imagining you're here because this is the pioneering track, right? And so you're in the midst of either starting something new or thinking about starting something new. Am I correct? How many of you are you're still at this conception phase? You're still tossing around in your mind and heart what you're going to do. Okay, all right. And how many of you are kind of you're into it? You've started planting. You've been in for a while. Okay. And how many of you are in the city? In a city. You're in an urban center. Okay. How many of you are in the city of Toronto? All right, cool. And how many of you are more of a rural or suburban or mid urban? I don't know what they all are, but
very
anyway.
Small city.
Very small city. What small city is that?
Thorold, which is on top of St. Catharines on the
experiment. Okay.
18,000
population. All right, yeah. Beautiful. I don't know if in your planting plans and your pioneering plans, if you are considering this whole idea of the context of neighborhood, and this is what we're going to talk about today. And I think I will always talk in biases and ideals, as every church planter does. So, you know, just never mind my dogmatism. I'll be dogmatic, I'm sure, and I'm most of the time I'm wrong. But I'm figuring it out. I really am figuring out this journey of church planting in a neighborhood. Let me tell you a little bit about my journey to this point. I planted a church with my wife and along with my wife in 1999 in Mississauga, which is also a small city, 800,000 people. We started my church there from 1999 and pastored it until 2009, so for 10 years. And I wouldn't have typically called it a neighborhood focused kind of context, but certainly we tried to instill incarnational missional principles that did play itself out in our neighborhood. But the suburban setting, I find, is a little bit more challenging for the kind of neighborhood vision I'm going to express with you today. I think rural settings and urban settings probably lend themselves to what I'm going to share with you today more than suburban settings, where people are used to driving places. And the sense, a strong sense of neighborhood, isn't as evident, I think, in suburban settings as it is in urban and rural settings. That's not meant to be a stereotype. I'm sure there's wonderful neighborhoods in suburban settings. I just know I've planted in both settings, and I have just kind of from experience realized that at least neighborhoods in the city of Toronto lend themselves more towards a neighborhood vision and context for planting as opposed to suburban. All that said, I did start out in a townhouse complex, a very small one in the middle of Mississauga, and that did turn out to be just an exciting time of interacting with neighbors, inviting neighbors into Christian community, and baptizing new people in Christian faith, and it was a fantastic thing. But it wasn't as purely neighborhood as what I'm going to share with you today. So in 2010, my wife and I decided to take a risk, and I think you were just talking about risks, and we thought, well, let's do this church planting thing again. We are gluttons for punishment. Let's go for it again. And so we moved our family downtown, and we're able to purchase homes when we church plant, and they're always miraculous because we look back and think, how do we ever afford that? It's amazing what banks will loan you and for how long. And so we settled into a neighborhood just west of here with the vision and plan that we would find people of like mind and like faith, people who are dedicated to following Jesus in and around our neighborhood, and we would tell them about this exciting vision for kind of this neighborhood approach to church, and they would sign on the dotted line and they would join us. We thought maybe even area churches would give away some of their people in the neighborhood in which we were looking to pioneer, and that didn't really work out very well either. So we had this wonderful vision of organically starting with people, some Christians in the neighborhood, to organically start this church, you know, primarily based in homes to start, and then eventually move towards a corporate worship gathering. And by the midway of 2011, the vision wasn't fading, but the plan was fading. It was really not coming together the way we had envisioned at all. And this was followed up by our denomination's decision to say, sayonara, we are not funding you anymore, and off you go, God bless you, you now have no salary. So we were in a difficult place, to put it mildly. I ended up getting full-time employment and trying to figure out what actually God had called us to do. And in all of that, we never lost sight of the call for our neighborhood, and continued on living in a neighborhood in the city in a way that we felt was incarnational, that we felt was on mission, and simply really became part of the neighborhood in which we were living. What ended up happening, there's all kinds of crazy things in this story, but what ended up happening is we ended up locking arms with the local church, who had a mutual vision, similar vision to this neighborhood church planting plan that we had. We ended up locking arms with them and said, let's do this together. And I now work on part-time on staff with a church here in the city called Free Church. And I also work part-time as a chaplain at a nursing home, and wonderfully planned right in the neighborhood where I live. So that's kind of my context. If I were to do it all over again, you know, and you look back, and it probably would just happen anyway, because I am a fire ready aim guy anyway. I don't really think about the plans. I just fire. And but if I were to do it all over again in the perfect neighborhood kind of church planting world, I would find a group of people first with a shared mission and vision and values, and I'd say, prayerfully, let's all dream and pray and think about moving into a particular neighborhood and starting a church together. Probably would do it with no less than half a dozen people. I would not recommend doing what I did. I would not recommend you parachute into a neighborhood where you know absolutely nobody on a hope and a prayer somehow you're going to find some Christians in your neighborhood, and churches in the area are going to generously give away wonderful people to help you. What was I smoking? So where we are now is we are taking a core group of people from this church that I'm a part of, and we are planting in a neighborhood. We don't have, I would say we have a ton of people out of the 40 people, 30 people, 35 people that are part of our core. About 15 of them live in the neighborhood. However, there are several families who are now planning to move into the neighborhood. The only challenge is housing costs have gone up about $300,000 in the last 3 years. And to rent a three-bedroom home for a family, which is many of the people, it's $4,000 to $5,000 a month to rent a home. So gentrification has its challenges for church planting. But there's a lot of wonderful people among us in our core group who are really considering making particular sacrifices to be part of what God's doing. So it's kind of the plans coming together, but certainly not my way. And we're excited about what God's doing amongst us. I want us to take a look at a kind of a scale, I guess I would call it. When you are considering this idea of what it would mean to plant in the context of a neighborhood, and I'm going to kind of define these terms and consider. Can you see okay? I'm in your way. Consider. Where you might be currently, or where your thinking is in terms of the kind of church you're envisioning. And this is not my this is not original with me. This is adapted from Mark Gornick's book to Live at Peace, and Robert Linthicum, Empowering the Poor. Let's look at this idea of what it would mean to be a church in the neighborhood. A church in the neighborhood is kind of like the two churches that are in my neighborhood. They come in on Sundays, they take everybody's parking, and then they leave, and we see them 7 days later, and they do the same thing again. That is, I've lived in the neighborhood now for almost 3.5 years, and literally that is the only presence that these churches have in our neighborhood. They are in the neighborhood. Most of the people commute in, interestingly enough. It's an interesting phenomenon in Toronto that particular ethnic groups decide to get a building and then, I guess maybe it's affordability, I have no idea, but then congregate in that one area and then leave. And maybe they have tremendous impact in the neighborhoods where they live, I don't know. But I know that the presence of their building in the neighborhood in which they worship has little or no impact. The primary purpose would be worship on Sunday. So people come in, they worship in a space, and then they leave. That's a church in the neighborhood. A church for the neighborhood engages the church, engages the neighborhood with outreach programs. It's maybe a mix of local people living in and around the neighborhood. It could be a mix of people who commute in. And primarily, whatever they feel their purpose is that probably in their heart and mind is to reach people with the gospel. But I would say that the perceived purpose is religious colonization, is that pretty much from another space and realm, somebody somewhere strategizes ideas to then mobilize people into activities that the church does to the community or neighborhood, and potentially could be perceived as a religious colonization. The church with the neighborhood becomes one with neighbors in struggles and aspirations. Most of those people are locals, though maybe not all. Their perceived and primary purpose is mutuality and loving God and neighbor. So when you look at that spectrum of kind of church in, for, and with, where do you see yourself? Where do you see yourself currently? Where do you hope to see yourself? Where do you see where the lines are a little bit blurry? It's, again, we live in these ideals and these nice compartments, and it's not all as easy and as simple as that. Sometimes these things blur. But I'm just wondering if you could consider maybe thinking about where you find yourself in that spectrum. And if you see maybe the value or challenges with certain areas, with certain ways of being and doing. I mean, where would you say that your tradition has mostly been in that? This is now that you can say something if you'd like.
Right. So I think there's a lot of overlap, like mm-hmm. back and forth. Yeah. But I also think there's not a lot of necessarily experience in traditional people who have traditionally been churched with this idea of mutuality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that. Another comment?
We're in a really old, established church in downtown Toronto, and the answer to this question that you're posing would depend on who you were speaking to in the congregation.
Right.
So if you're speaking to someone who's been at the church for 20 years or more, the perception is we're a gathered church, so we would definitely be church in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
This is one of the falsities that we're trying to break down. I'm the associate pastor, has been there 6 months, and the senior pastor has been there 11 months. So we're both new. So trying to break that down, because we are actually church for the neighborhood, but wanting to move to church with the neighborhood. So it would depend on where. So we've got folks who, a bunch of them are coming tomorrow for the Sunday, who have strategically moved into the neighborhood, specifically with a heart for mission and for God's kingdom.
Mm.
And little T. So they would be definitely church. So it really depends, and then the congregation, who you're speaking.
Right. Yeah, and I think there might be also hybrid, kind of hybrid ways of doing this, because, we don't live in this perfect world of church with the neighborhood either. We currently say contextually or collectively we say we take spiritual responsibility for this neighborhood. There are people in this neighborhood who live here and who are actively engaged with the neighborhood, et cetera, et cetera. And then we ask our folks to say, engage in your neighborhood. Do this in your neighborhood. It's also a part of a church planning strategy for us to say that as people gather in neighborhoods and are on mission and doing community at this, we're naturally, hopefully we can do this thing that we try to do on our own better, because we're thinking about our folks. Let's, for example, we have quite a few folks who live in the Junction here in Toronto, and gathering them intentionally. So instead of organizing our small groups around affinity or topics or whatever, we're saying let's think about it geographically. And again, this works for Toronto because we're so organized locally in neighborhoods. I don't know if it always works for suburban areas or not, but your comment.
Yeah, there's a preposition missing on either side of it, the same preposition, church of the neighborhood. One of the reasons why the church in the neighborhood can understand why it doesn't work is because they used to be of the neighborhood. Everybody went. It was just where you go. It was an integrated part of life in the community of the place.
Right.
That has changed.
Right.
But they continue doing what they did when they were in the building. But on the other side of the formula, church with the neighborhood, that still isn't a part. We're church, their neighborhood. The church of the neighborhood, the kingdom is no longer bound by how we define church, either by building or the people. It extends
right.
beyond that. So if I'm bringing justice to situations who are, to people who are Buddhists, if that's justice, that's a part of God's kingdom. If I'm bringing peace to Hindus and Muslims, that's somehow a part of the kingdom. It's still not the whole thing that I want, because I really do want people to follow Jesus, but it should be of the neighborhood,
right?
Ideally.
Yeah.
So it's a tough mix. But
yeah.
I would suggest on either side we have another.
Yeah, and you wonder if the church of is a time that was gone by of Christendom that, you just wonder if that is actually the, and I certainly understand your point around that the kingdom breaks out of certainly our ecclesial kind of organizing, absolutely, but also this understanding of that's an imagination, it's a way of thinking of ourselves that I think has its origins in Christendom, and I would suggest that that day is gone. Yeah, no, absolutely. No, I appreciate that.
Yeah, I would
with the WIF. Interestingly enough, I think Flemington Park Ministry has always chosen to be a community-based ministry in the Don Mills area. From the very beginning, they resisted sort of working out of a traditional church. And so over the years, the trust has been built up between Flemington Park Ministry and the neighborhood, which has allowed amazing relationship building, because it's a neighborhood that is one of the most diverse in the entire world. It has 90 different cultures and languages within a 5-block radius, and 40,000 people. And it's very exciting to be a part of a faith journey there, where there is that sense of, not only would we as the Anglican presence there say we're with, the neighborhood sort of looks and says you're with.
Mm.
And that's it's a very gracious kind of relationship. It's a very vulnerable one. It could end in a moment. You realize how vulnerable it is when you're in it, but it's still very gracious, and we're trying to use our experience to try and help our neighborhood churches, like the ones on the periphery of our neighborhood, to maybe learn some of the things that build relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, we don't let anybody come into the neighborhood to bring food.
Mm.
No, we've got a food bank, but do not bring food.
Mm.
If you want to come and build a relationship with this community and get to know them and then have food associated with that, that's fine.
Mm.
But you've got to build the relationship, or it's not worth bringing the food.
Mm-hmm.
Hunger isn't that critical.
Mm.
Well, it is. It is a crisis, but it requires relationship and not food.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Any other examples of kind of with that you've engaged in some with neighbor a church with the neighborhood?
Well, sort of. I have a parish in town there, a village called Millbrook. It used to be a 6-point parish at one time. It's now compressed down to one. So we really span the gamut. We have people that live in the town, we have people that live in the surrounding communities that used to have churches, and they come in. But we have these subdivisions that are built immediately behind the church. We're trying to become church with.
Mm.
And our vehicle for doing that, seeing as the church is on a dead-end street, and you can't see the thing until you're physically on top of it, used to have a big steeple that came down in fire many years ago, and they never put it back up again. So the church is invisible and has not been in connection with its community for some time. So we've decided to become incarnational, and we've put up a bookstore and a storefront on the main street.
Good.
As our listening post and our means of connecting again with the community and finding
Great.
Out what the needs are of the community.
Our
source of our vehicle for delivering small groups and various other things to see how we start engaging again.
Good. That's great. Love that.
I can give you a really small example, and I do so with respect to you, because I know on his church, they've started a community garden that's right on property, and I really wanted to do that where I was, and discovered that because we're surrounded by a golf course, there's chemicals, and the light's not right, and all kinds of things. And so in the end, we got 2 plots in the local organic community garden. And so instead of having people come to us, now we have 2 plots there.
Right.
And when people garden, they talk to whoever is there, including the Muslim lady who's in the plot next to them, and the people who are staffing the plot.
Beautiful.
And it wasn't really the intention to go that far away, but at the same time, it has created this kind of very much this width.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have to take care of their grounds. It's
right.
Deal.
Right. That's good. We're here.
Not been very good at being church with the neighborhood, but have tried a number of things, and they were doing some construction summer, and so there was a big fence along, and so we talked about there's a farm, we're right at the end of the farmer's market building, so we talked about waving a ribbon out and allowing people to write prayers or hopes or wishes on the fence where the construction was. We're also kind of kitty corners to the two funeral homes in town, and so we put it out expecting the kind of middle class young families that live in Milton's suburbs while they're with their kids to put nice little prayers of things that they're thankful for. The weekend we put it up, a 17-year-old in town committed suicide, and hundreds of high school kids kind of descended on this fence, and I dropped off some ribbons on a Saturday morning, and Sunday morning there was like 200 of them up, and it was all like late at night on Saturday when there was a visitation.
Wow. Yeah, that is providential. Yeah, very good. There's this these two quotes I want to just bring your attention here. One is this whole idea of church with the neighborhood is one in which is where the church discerns its life in the life of the neighborhood. It discerns its life in the life of the neighborhood, as opposed to discerning its life in boardrooms or the programs that get handed down to us by whomever. I don't know how everyone's denominational things work here, but it actually gets developed out of doing life in the rhythms of the neighborhood. I love this. This has made so much sense to me. And I definitely am a strategic thinker. I read, have read a lot of stuff on leadership and look up to strategic leaders. But this made so much sense to me in this neighborhood approach, maybe more incarnational approach to church planting, in the sense that we use tactics rather than strategy. And he writes, it's not a matter of drawing up grand plans, but instead involves the daily improvisational practices of neighboring, prayer, and social commitment. And I think this is what some of folks who are in a paradigm of planting churches that are what we pretty much churches for the neighborhood. They're looking for your strategies of what are your plans for the next year, and they're like, well, when you get into the lifeblood of the neighborhood, those things don't even make sense anymore. Those things don't even make sense anymore because you're living in the rhythm and the life of a neighborhood where needs and opportunities are just coming up here and there, and you're learning new things as you and your team, your core, do life in that neighborhood. Again, it's not to say that we don't need strategies or strategies aren't important, but I think when we move into this whole idea of neighborhood church planting, we begin to work more in tactics than strategies, or tragedies. one of the really interesting things that church planters have to do in this situation is that we tend to be catalyzers and initiators and activists, and we come up with ideas all the time of things that will work. And we think will work. And again, it changes our posture into a listening posture. I remember when we first moved into our neighborhood, again, we just kind of were listening to our neighborhood. And I got on the neighborhood list of things that were happening. And someone sent out an emails at Christmas time saying, we would love to see a neighborhood Christmas caroling in our neighborhood. And my first thought was, wonderful, there's more Christians in the neighborhood. Finally, I'm going to find some people that I can, you know, maybe invite into our small little core group. And so I pursued it and followed up the email. And, they said, come on over to our house. We're rehearsing on this evening, and it's going to be fantastic. So I went there and I realized that nobody there was from Christian faith at all. They were all just wanting to sing Christmas carols. And then I got a really interesting question. They asked me, so what is a church planter? And I thought, oh my goodness, they Googled my name and they figured out who I was. And one lady was saying, oh, you know, who's a church planter? And then her brother who was there with her, a middle-aged gentleman, piped up and said, I think you go around and you like look after gardens at people's churches, right? And well, no, not really. And then I had to explain what a church planter actually does. So there I was, and in the situation, just being with my neighbors, and they appointed me the leader. So you're the pastor or some kind of type, so you lead us. And now for the last 3 years, I don't even have to really organize it. These folks want to do that together, and we walk up and down streets, people who are from Jewish background, atheist, agnostic, neo-Buddhist types, every type. We go up and down the street singing Silent Night, Holy Night, Joy to the World, Frosty the Snowman, we do that too. But it's just it was a phenomenal opportunity to be with the neighborhood. And I'm inviting some of those folks into our community, into Christian community. They're not really interested right now, but until then, I'll continue to be with them and just be a neighbor. Yeah, exactly. we need some vocalists. exactly. We decided, as another thing we would do, a lot of church planning. I'm a part of some church planning networks that, again, are really aggressive with doing things in neighborhoods. And again, this may work in some places. And they actually have some church planning networks I'm a part of actually have festival equipment. How, like, you can actually throw like a huge festival in your neighborhood. They got bouncy castles and barbecues and all of the everything you need for a festival. And so the temptation was for me to say, let's do one in our neighborhood and I'll plan it and we'll invite everybody. And so we said, well, let's not do that. Let's see what happens. What opportunities emerge? And then all of a sudden I find out that our street has a festival every year. They plan it. And I was like, and I was a hero. I've got this festival equipment I can bring on. And I bring in the bouncy castle and just made it a part of that. And then I found out that the local daycare in my neighborhood does a festival every year. And myself and some others from our church came along that are connected to the neighborhood and said, we'd love to volunteer and help and just be part of what you guys are doing. These are just examples of being with the neighborhood as a church.
Two practical
questions. Sure.
Bouncy castle and insurance.
It was crazy, actually.
Like owning your own bouncy castle.
We had to rent it from an organization, a church planning organization, and then we had to get insurance from another organization. That was a nightmare, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. There are some bouncy castles that you can rent that come with their own insurance.
There you go.
It sounded like a relatively cheap way to get something happening in your neighborhood.
Yes.
Which is why I said insurance, because that then
you
can't just go and buy a bouncy castle.
No. I think it costs us $250 to rent all the equipment. And then there was another church who graciously put us under their insurance for
free. The other thought is the tactics rather than strategy.
Mm-hmm.
It's much, I think, I'll say it this way, it's much easier to get your supporters on board when you've got the strategy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, if you've been given X amount of thousands of dollars to do this, mm-hmm. you can do whatever you want. But if you're trying to mm-hmm. to keep supporters and or get more money, it's so hard to say, well, I'm not quite sure what I'm doing.
Yeah. That's a great question. It's a great practical question. I think there are still strategies to actually show that this is the strategies are tactics. The strategies is this. I mean, you can't always map it all out in terms of, and this is going to happen here and here and here, but I think if we can cast a contagious vision around what incarnational ministry looks like, and the sense of urgency, and the sense of urgency that this kind of improvisational, tactical, incarnational approach is actually what it's what this world demands of us right now.
Mm-hmm. It's the entrepreneurial people that will risk with
you. Yes. Yeah, you're right.
Just a sidebar.
Sure.
The insurance issue.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So we found that the diocese, that the organizations that wanted to fly completely independent of the diocese, then had to carry their own policies.
Mm.
So they found churches that would embrace them, but not interfere.
Good.
And then run according to the various policies that are required.
Good.
So we're able to get stuff going.
Yeah. Denominations. Can't live with them, can't live without them. Couple, yes, yeah.
Could you tell us the name?
One is Toronto Church Planting, which is with the Canadian Baptist friends of mine, and the other one is the C2C Network, which is a Mennonite Brethren-based church planting organization, but that plants interdenominationally, actually. Yeah.
C2C.
C, number two, C. Yeah. Is that on? That's being recorded. Okay. Yeah, so let's, what time we have? Oh, I kind of want to take a look at some biblical underpinnings, and there's all kinds of biblical stuff we could talk about in terms of incarnation and mission. This is one that I've been kind of reflecting on for the last few months, especially in an urban environment. It's kind of towards kind of a understanding of urban ministry, and it comes out of the Jeremiah passage. It might be familiar to you. This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to all those I carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. Build houses and settle down, plant gardens and eat what they produce, marry and have sons and daughters, find wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage so that they too may have sons and daughters. Increase in number there. Do not decrease. Also seek the shalom of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because in its shalom is your shalom. There is a part, and I think this is part of maybe why I'm comfortable with a church with the neighborhood, is because there's a sense that's just not in an Old Testament context, but actually gets carried over into the New Testament, that the people of God understand themselves in living in some way as exiles. And even though that we are with the neighborhood, we still have a distinct calling on our lives as the people of God in a neighborhood. And as we are with the neighborhood, we are also people of God, people who are committed followers of Jesus who want to live out a very alternative way of life and community, and in some ways even spirituality. I would say that the other part, and as I mentioned prior, is that we understand ourselves as exiles because we now live in an era in which the church no longer has that prominent place. We all now live in the era of Christendom where we're no longer the church of the people, of the neighborhood. We are certainly on the outside. So understanding ourselves as exiles, Michael Frost writes this in his book Exiles. He says, "We are called to the ongoing and risky negotiation of engagement and resistance." And I think as you, as I kind of live this out with some of my friends and folks who are partnering with us in planting here in this neighborhood, we undoubtedly come up to places where we realize there is a difference in what we hold valuable and what we hold value to and what the neighborhood does. And sometimes those things are subtle things, sometimes those are very obvious things. And I kind of have an illustration of that in a city like Toronto where it's becoming quickly gentrified. I received this this brochure in the mail. It's an advertisement for condominiums. I don't know if you can see that. It says Praise the Loft.
That's my neighborhood. That's just down the street from me. That drove me nuts.
then you know this. You know this. Right? Start your worship here. Union Lofts, right? It gets better.
That's an old Seventh-day Adventist church.
This is the sad reality that's ongoing in our city, actually. Because home is the new religion. Here's what it says. As for your home, it's a shrine, a place that reflects your fervor for life, design, and the planet. Your loft is designed not only to stand the test of time, but to defy the high energy costs of the future, acts somehow as a testament of who you are and how you want to live. It's brilliant marketing. It's kind of love it and hate it at the same time. In the light of all of this, is it so surprising then that what you seek is this, a perfect union? And then it gets to the centerfold, and it's this. Prepare to be converted. Oh, and I got that. I thought, oh my goodness, we're in trouble. What I realized was again and again and again, there are values that drive our culture and even our neighborhoods in the city that fly in the face of what it means to be the people of God and faithful followers of Jesus. And I think Michael Frost puts it right. We find ourselves in this ongoing, risky engagement of being with the neighborhood. But we also come up in times where we realize, wow, there's different values that drive us. And how are we living those out? And how are we being sucked into it? It's amazing how quickly I can realize as homes get in my neighborhood are being sold for so much money. And secretly I'm going, yes, yes, I am. I'm telling you, the value of my home's gone way up, and I realize what gentrification does to the poor, and how this plays out in the city. And you realize there's this aspect of Babylon that we are in here, and if you've got to feel that tension as you're doing it, and as a group discern and talk about it, and never ever coming to a place of judgment, obviously, and condemnation of the culture, but to engage it and maybe even prophetically speak to it, and certainly model an alternative way as being with the neighborhood. And I believe people would be drawn to that, because at the end of the day, I don't think ultimately people are actually drawn to this, and I don't really think that's what they ultimately will convert them. The passage in Jeremiah is so practical. It's just, you know, build homes, raise your families there. This is in a foreign place, right? This is in a very foreign place, and saying it's just this incarnation right there in this text as Jeremiah is challenging God's people to actually integrate. I found this.
Kind of church. So we're meeting in there to worship our group. So I invited a lot of my neighbors to come. None of them came. But one, this neighbor did pass this on to me, thought it might be good for one of my sermons on neighborhood. So this is hilarious. Dear neighbor, due to your new terawatt floodlight shining through our bedroom window like a small but intense sun, I have removed the lamp and placed it in your letterbox. Regards, David, and leaves his email address.
And then he maps out the whole scenario there. Can you see? A is this, oh my God, what's happening? Is that a floodlight? Our bedroom window, and then funny little dog there. And then they go on with this email back and forth. I mean, I'll put the link there if you want to see. It's hilarious. They're just dropping F-bombs on each other back and forth. And you realize that when you live in a neighborhood, when you actually, especially in an urban context, you are so close to people that inevitably you're going to be challenged. Whether it's a barking dog or people who don't clear their sidewalks or whatever it's going to be, it just challenges you. And just this whole idea of moving in and being good neighbors—it sounds so simple, but it is so foundational in what we do in the city and what we do in terms of church planning. There was a book that was written pretty recently. I don't think it's a fantastic book, but it's a fantastic concept. And what happened was these group of pastors got together and they went to the mayor of their city and asked. You know, we're tired of guys sitting around doing nothing. We want to start some programs in the city that's going to help really make a difference. And the mayor said, you know what? You know, we really don't need any more programs. I mean, we do have things that, you know, we need for this group and that group and this group and that group. He said, what we really need are people who'll be good neighbors, who'll be good neighbors. And they wrote this book called The Art of Neighboring. And there's this really practical tool that I want you, if you have a pen, I want you to draw it on your page if you haven't seen this before. If you can draw that quadrant, that large square with then nine squares there, and then in the middle you can, that yellow home there, that's your house. That's where you live, or that's your apartment or your condo. That's you. And the exercise is to then try to recall or write the names of the neighbors in each of those homes or those apartments that are above you or beside you or behind you or wherever that is. And I would challenge you, for those of you who are trying to mobilize your team or mobilize your church or whatever, your people or whatever, put it out to them. It starts, neighborhood church planning starts with this really, really profound idea, knowing the person next door, knowing their name, knowing about them. It is the simplest thing, but maybe in a world of heightened individualism and busy, busy schedules, it's not an easy thing to fill out all the time. So should we bleep this part of the tape? Are we good?
This is good. I tried to give you.
It's in. It's in now. Well, it's here.
Yes,
I don't know.
When I was working in Regina and had partnered with a health center in one of the poor areas of Regina, one of the single women in that community just blew me out of the water. She was, her husband was drug addicted. She had young children. That woman put more passion into what it meant to be a neighbor. She took her young children, she took them door to door to make in her neighborhood, to make sure her neighbors were okay, and she wanted her children to know what it meant to serve a neighborhood. I mean, that woman was modeling for everyone what it meant to be a real neighbor. Now, anybody looking in from the privilege of the outside, mm. would look at this woman, if you ever saw her, and probably demean her, probably think she's overweight, she doesn't look well kept, mm. She's poor, she's probably not intelligent, or, you know, would have put the labels mm. on her. Mm. And to me, she was the Christ mm. figure mm. in her neighborhood.
Mm.
And I just felt so privileged mm. to walk alongside her
yeah.
and watch her grow and watch the community grow in their mm. own capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just,
yeah.
when you can do that,
yep.
when you can walk with people and see them
mm.
take it on, it's just, oh my
yeah,
God.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Like,
very beautiful.
God, you know?
That's great. That's wonderful.
She would be able to fill this out.
Yeah. They say that usually only about when they do this with Christians, it's only about usually 10% they usually can that actually can fill it all out. So it's challenging, but it's intentional, isn't it? There's an intentionality to it. It gives you a picture of it, right? Okay. They also said in this study that when they were interviewing. The mayor and the municipal leaders in the city, when these pastors were asking these questions, one of the comments from the city manager was that really they see no difference between Christian neighbors and non-Christian neighbors. And it's interesting, we are the people of the, right? Love God, love neighbor as self. But no, we have more complex ideas we need to debate and talk about. Yes. Yes.
Mm.
Yep. Yep. Are you a priest?
Deacon,
oh, you're deacon. Okay.
And, so I'm trying to make
sure.
Sure.
Good. Good. Yeah, mm-hmm. comment.
I suspect we're also caught up in the basicness. Is, you know, we're worried that that's
right. Yes, yes, yes. Do you know one of the things that was just an affirmation that we had moved into the right neighborhood? With this heart and vision for what we're talking about today, was about 3 weeks after we'd moved into the house, there was a knock on the door. We opened the door, and there was about four children, age range between 8 and 14, who said, "We would just like to welcome you to the neighborhood. We heard you have children, and we'd like to meet them." And I thought, pinch me. Where am I? Am I in the middle of this city right now? And there was this fertility for neighborliness in this massive place called Toronto. And it's been a beautiful thing. Before I knew it, I was voted in the vice president of the Residents Association. I just showed up to things. I just was there, and then, well, you're here all the time. Why don't you do this? I had to pinch myself. Someone came to my door the other day, and I'm signing this huge petition for bike lanes along Bloor. Now I'm representing my neighborhood, and the guy from another neighborhood association is asking me to. I'm signing this. How did this happen to me? And at the end of the day, it happened by being in the actually being with neighbors, being there, showing up to things. It's not rocket science. There's more I could say. We're almost at 5:30. There is, I don't know if this is so much an issue with you folks. I'm coming more from an evangelical background, and maybe you have a breadth and depth of the gospel that goes further than saving souls. I think you probably do. You've probably worked out your peace and justice thing pretty good. But it was interesting that proximity, this idea of being with a neighborhood, isn't always enough. There's an understanding of our call, our missional call, that takes us beyond church services, spiritual things and ideas and programs. And I actually take just some really practical things. In his book, Renewing the City, Robert Lupton has this 10-year consultation relationship with a pastor who got really intentional about this neighborhood thing. And 250 of their people moved into a particular area in the city. And Robert Lupton journeyed with that church for about 10 years in consulting with them. And they came to the end of the 10 years, and Lupton describes the results and as he's interacting with this pastor from this church as being quite frustrating for them. The things that they'd hoped to do weren't happening. They had started all kinds of ministries for kids and youth and new immigrants, but really no lasting change was happening in the neighborhood they're focused on. And Robert Lupton began his investigation with persistent questioning of the church leadership. Here were some of his profound discoveries. Each time, this is what he writes, each time I asked about life in the neighborhood, the responses seemed to end up with the issue of the church. These Christians, he writes, had brought with them a church-centric theology of personal salvation and corporate worship. Robert Lupton continues with his findings. If this church was ever to grasp a vision for transformation of their community, they had to consider that there is more to salvation than saving an individual soul. And finally, a theology of occupation or presence is a huge step in the right direction, but it is not enough. It must be coupled with a theology of engagement, seeking the shalom of a city, and understanding how the people of faith are to engage in activities that transform places as well as people. In the fullness of the gospel is to have a redemptive impact on the city. It must penetrate every strata of urban life. And I would just like to say this. The beautiful thing about shalom is that it is both gift and task. It is both gift and task. And the beautiful part about this passage is that Jeremiah says, pray for the city. The things that we long to see happen in our neighborhoods, the transformation of community, of lives, of families, the empowerment of the poor, the inclusion of the stranger, all of these things. Certainly we roll up our sleeves and we go and we do it with our neighborhood. But if we not do it with prayer, if we don't understand that shalom is not just a task but also a gift that comes from God, and that we continually place our neighborhoods in his hands, in that I think we will find our shalom as the city experiences its shalom. It is 5:30. We had lots of interaction and discussion, but I will close. So thank you all for being here today, and yeah.
We hope you enjoy this podcast. For more information on the conference and how you can register for the next Vital Church Planting Conference, please visit www.vitalchurchplanting.com.